Welcome to the Deep Dive, the Polytrauma Academy podcast. We're here to really cut through the noise and get to the core of what you need to know.
That's the goal.
Today, we're starting a really important journey, taking an in-depth look, a deep dive into the basics of polytrauma management.
Mm-hmm. Foundational aspects.
Exactly. And you might think of trauma as, you know, an individual tragedy, something personal.
Singular event, yeah.
But did you know that nearly 6 million people die each year just from injuries worldwide?
It's a shocking number.
Yeah, that's about 10% of all deaths globally. It's pretty startling when you hear it like that, isn't it?
It truly is. And for this particular deep dive, we're actually grounding ourselves in the textbook of polytrauma management. Specifically, we're looking at its first chapter.
Okay.
And this text is, well, it's quite unique. It really emphasizes clinical decision making.
Ah.
And it brings together experts from all sorts of different fields, different systems, pathologies, age groups to tackle, you know, the sheer complexity of severe multiple injuries.
Right. So our mission today is really to unpack the huge impact trauma has, not just on the patient right there in the moment.
No, much wider.
But the wider public health consequences, the economic stuff, the social side, too.
Exactly.
What does it actually mean for a society when so many lives are hit by injury? And, you know, how do we even begin to grasp that scale?
That's really the core question we want to explore. So whether you're listening as a medical professional, maybe looking to sharpen your expertise.
Or maybe a policymaker.
Or a policymaker needing solid evidence, yeah.
Yeah.
Or even if you're just, you know, curious about the world.
Which hopefully many are.
Hopefully. You'll find some, I think, genuinely surprising facts and some really crucial insights here today.
Okay, let's unpack this then. When we talk about trauma, it's clearly way more than just a broken bone or one single injury.
Much more.
And this textbook, right from the start, it frames trauma as a major cause of death and disability across the globe.
A huge public health problem, yeah.
It really paints it as a global issue, doesn't it? Far bigger than just what happens inside an ER.
Absolutely. And what's really striking, I think, is the sheer scale we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization, they estimate close to 6 million people die from injuries every single year.
6 million.
6 million. And get this, it's the leading cause of death for children and young adults, anyone under 45.
Wow. That's powerful. That really shifts the perspective from, you know, one patient in one bed.
To a population crisis, exactly.
And like we said, it's not only about the deaths, is it?
No, not at all.
There are millions, literally millions of non-fatal injuries every year, too.
That's right.
So when you think about that massive number, what are some of those ripple effects, the ones maybe we don't always think about, for survivors, families, society?
Well, you're right to point that out, the ripple effects. These non-fatal injuries, they often lead to lifelong problems, physical ones, psychological ones.
Mm.
And that means serious healthcare costs, obviously, but also a tremendous burden on society through lost productivity.
Right. People not being able to work or work in the same way.
Precisely.
Yeah.
The impact just keeps going far beyond that initial event. It can change someone's well-being, their financial stability.
For decades.
For decades, yeah. And it even affects the broader economy.
That idea, an injury in just a split second, changing a life's path for decades.
It's profound.
It is. And that chain reaction, it leads us, surprisingly fast actually, straight to the money side of things.
Mm-hmm. The economics.
And this is where it gets really interesting from a societal viewpoint. The financial side is just staggering.
It really is.
It's not just about the hospital bills, is it? It's this whole comprehensive economic hit that can strain entire systems.
Exactly. The textbook highlights this clearly. Polytraumatized patients, they often face permanent disability.
Right.
Which means they need significant financial and social support, often for the rest of their lives, private and professional. And just to put a number on it, in Switzerland, for example, they estimate that one single polytraumatized patient.
One person. Mm-hmm.
Can end up costing around 2 million euros in total.
2 million euros for one patient.
That's the estimate. It's a massive figure. Think about the burden on insurance, on taxpayers.
That just, it really drives home the value of prevention, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
But I wonder, is it always that clear cut financially? Like, are there complex trade-offs when you try to implement really broad prevention strategies?
That's a good question. And it's something the text touches on. It forces us to ask, okay, how can we mitigate these enormous costs?
Right. What works?
Well, the text suggests really looking closely at things like productivity costs, return to work rates.
Ah, okay. So measuring the impact beyond just the direct medical spend.
Exactly. If we can identify, You know, prognostic factors, what predicts these high costs or poor return to work rates. Then we can target preventive actions much better.
Target the high cost groups.
Precisely. And ultimately, that should reduce the overall costs and get more people back to work.
So the insight there is that prevention isn't just, you know, the right thing to do ethically.
Though it is that, too.
Of course. But it's actually a powerful financial strategy for the whole health system. It could fundamentally shift the cost curve.
That's the argument, and it's a strong one. Investing in prevention isn't just ethical, it's economically sound. Forward-thinking policy, really.
Okay. So, shifting gears just a little, where are all these injuries actually happening? The sources seem to show some, well, intriguing trends.
Yeah, it's a bit mixed.
It looks like we've made real progress in some areas, but maybe, kind of paradoxically, lost ground in others.
We certainly have seen positive impacts from legislation in many countries. Things like, you know, speed limits.
Right, standard stuff.
Yeah, enhanced car safety requirements, stricter rules on drinking and driving. These measures have genuinely reduced road traffic accidents.
Yeah.
And even accidents in the workplace, actually.
Okay, so those are definite wins, clear public health policy successes.
Definitely.
But then there's this other side. Leisure time accidents. Apparently they're on the rise.
That's what the data suggests, yeah.
And the textbook points to this idea of the fun society, especially younger people living by this credo of no risk, no fun. What's the context there? Is that purely down to individual choices, or are there sort of deeper cultural things happening that make this so tricky to deal with?
Well, it seems to represent a pretty complex societal shift. While laws have curbed some kinds of trauma.
Like road accidents.
Right. The rise in leisure accidents does suggest a strong cultural element is at play. And if we dive a bit deeper into just one area, say road traffic injuries again, the WHO estimates over 20 million non-fatal injuries every year, just from those.
20 million, wow.
And here's something particularly stark. Low and middle income countries. They only have about 60% of the world's motor vehicles.
Okay.
But they account for a staggering 93% of all road traffic deaths.
93%. That's a huge disparity. It really shines a light on global inequalities, doesn't it?
It really does. And even within high-income countries, the data often shows that people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds are more likely to be involved in road trauma.
So, again, it's clearly not just about individual choices. There are systemic factors, wider economic realities baked in, too.
Absolutely. Road traffic collisions, they can cost entire nations up to 3% of their GDP every year.
3%? That's enormous.
Huge. So the WHO, back in 2017, they outlined recommendations for prevention. Things focusing on better speed regulation, improving infrastructure, safety rules.
Right. Multi-pronged approach.
Exactly. So the insight, I think, is that while policy can definitely make environments safer.
Like roads and workplaces.
New risks pop up from changing lifestyles and these underlying socioeconomic gaps. Policy alone can't fix everything. You need to think about cultural shifts, systemic issues, too.
It's a really interesting contrast, isn't it? Policy driving success here, but new challenges emerging over there. And thinking about that no risk, no fun idea and the socioeconomic factors, have we ever seen societies, you know, historically manage to shift those kinds of deep cultural attitudes around risk for public health? It feels like a really tough nut to crack.
That is a powerful question. And while there might not be perfect historical parallels to this specific fun society paradox, we have seen major shifts in attitudes around things like, say, smoking or seatbelt use.
Good examples.
And those usually required a combination of things. Laws, yes, but also really long-term public awareness campaigns, changing social norms.
Right. It wasn't overnight.
Not at all. It suggests influencing culture takes time. It takes many different approaches working together and consistent messaging alongside the policies.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so let's talk about solutions then. Solutions that go beyond just the immediate trauma care, especially looking at these long-term problems.
Right.
The textbook mentions something called Fracture Liaison Services, FLS.
Yes, FLS.
What exactly are those? And why are they important in this bigger picture, especially with everything we've said about long-term costs and prevention?
Well, FLS are, I think, a fantastic example of a proactive strategy.
Okay.
They were developed initially by the American Society of Bone and Mineral Research and the International Osteoporosis Foundation.
Right.
And the goal was to tackle the rising rates and the economic burden of trauma specifically linked to underlying osteoporosis.
Ah, so it's about spotting a pattern, seeing that first fracture, not just as a one-off.
Exactly. Not as an isolated event, but potentially as a warning sign for an underlying condition.
So the basic idea, if I'm getting this right, is to connect the dots between that initial injury and something like osteoporosis to stop future trauma happening.
Precisely that. Looking ahead, not just reacting.
Okay.
So these services, they offer multidisciplinary care. They focus on treatment, yes, but crucially, on secondary prevention of more osteoporotic injuries.
Secondary prevention, meaning stopping it happening again.
Right. So that involves things like long-term monitoring, proper risk evaluation, fall prevention programs, all sorts of best practices rolled into one service. It's a comprehensive approach really designed to keep patients healthier and, importantly, prevent them getting injured again, which, as you say, links directly back to cutting those long-term societal costs we talked about.
It sounds really smart, you know, on paper.
Yeah.
A logical approach.
It is.
But does it actually work in the real world? And crucially, given those huge economic costs we highlighted, does it make a measurable difference financially in the long run? Or is it just, you know, another layer of healthcare spending?
No, the evidence is actually very strong on this. It absolutely does work, and it is economically viable.
Really?
Yes. A big systematic review recently looked at FLS across several countries, Australia, yeah. Canada, Japan, Sweden, Taiwan, the UK, the US.
Okay, a wide range.
It's a very wide range. Mm. And it found FLS was cost-effective in all of them compared to just standard care or doing nothing.
Cost-effective everywhere they looked.
Yes. And just to give one specific example, in the US, for patients who'd already had a hip fracture,
which is a major event.
A major costly event. These FLS programs, they generated estimated savings of nearly $67,000 per lifetime, per 10,000 patients.
Wow, $67,000 saved per... That's a significant return on investment.
It's substantial.
So the real takeaway here isn't just that proactive care is, you know, good medicine.
Although it is.
Right. But it fundamentally shifts that cost curve we were talking about.
Yeah.
It proves prevention isn't just ethical. It's a genuinely powerful financial strategy for health systems.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes a compelling case for how these targeted interventions can deliver really significant health and economic benefits over the long term.
Okay. So as we start to wrap up this deep dive, it's so clear that trauma is vastly more than just a medical event, isn't it?
Far more.
It's this really complex global challenge. It has these profound human, social, and economic ripple effects that touch, well, everyone. Individuals, families, entire national healthcare systems, economies.
And understanding that scope is crucial.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, those nearly 6 million deaths worldwide each year,
yeah,
to that estimated 2 million euro cost for just one polytrauma patient in a place like Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
It really highlights the urgency.
It does.
And it also underscores how important both those broad public policies are. Things like speed limits, car safety rules.
The big levers.
Yeah. And also those really targeted, multidisciplinary interventions like the fracture liaison services we just discussed.
Both ends of the spectrum are needed.
Exactly.
It's just a powerful reminder, I think, that our collective actions, our policies, but also maybe our individual choices too, they all play a pretty significant role in these outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen how effective policies can be in cutting down certain types of trauma.
Definitely.
And we've seen how targeted healthcare like FLS can lead to real long-term health and economic wins.
Indeed. The data really points us in a clear direction, identifying risk early and intervening proactively.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just about saving lives today.
It's about more than that.
It's about building more resilient communities and more sustainable healthcare systems for the future.
So here's a final thought to leave everyone with. Considering that rising trend we talked about in leisure time accidents, maybe driven partly by the no risk, no fun idea, and considering the proven cost effectiveness of preventative services like FLS, what other areas of our lives, or maybe society, could benefit from a similar shift in perspective, moving away from just accepting risk towards actively preventing those long-term societal burdens?
That's a great question to ponder.
Something to mull over until our next deep dive.